Sometimes to find your way, you have to lose the map. We are having real conversations with entrepreneurs, leaders, and makers about risk, innovation, and pursuing a vision. This is Coordinates Unknown. I'm Ana Rodas, and I'm here today with Chad Kotler, founder, co-founder, and CEO of Biscuit Belly. Welcome, Chad.
Thanks for having me.
I'm surprised you're this young. I didn't expect you to be this young.
It's the low stress, you know, work environment of owning restaurants. It's so easy.
Tell me, how did you get into owning restaurants?
Yeah, so it's an interesting path. I'm from Georgia originally, graduated University of Georgia, go Dogs, with a pharmacy degree. So I went from pharmacy to restaurants in a very bizarre, twisting, unique path. But we moved up to Louisville, Kentucky. I got a job at Sullivan University College
Still
of Pharmacy.
Pharmacy.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Moved up here to do pharmacy stuff and got a job at Sullivan University College of Pharmacy. They were opening, it was an upstart, it's like startup pharmacy school. I was like, that sounds fun and interesting. So we moved up here in 2009. My wife, also a pharmacist, got a job at Walmart, eventually worked at, moved over to Humana Insurance Company, and worked for like 4 or 5 years as a clinical pharmacist slash teacher. So my practice site was at University of Louisville Hospital. So I rounded with the medicine teams every day. It's like their little personal clinical pharmacist guy. And I actually took a group of students on a study abroad trip to Australia. And when we were doing like pharmaceutical things, Aboriginal health, and like we did some veterinary medicine and just did some cool stuff there. So we took 4 students there and that was in 2010 or 2011. When I was there, my wife went to this painting and drinking place in Alabama while she was visiting a mutual friend of ours. And she said, holy crap, we have to bring this to Louisville. This would go gangbusters. And so we were on the phone with the franchisor. Like, it was 14-hour time difference. I was up at like 2 a.m. having these calls, you know, with these people. And we're like, all right, let's do this. We didn't know anything about running a business, never owned a business. I had some interest in the past of owning, you know, being entrepreneurial. I feel like I have that entrepreneurial spirit. And so within a few months, maybe 6 to 8 months, we had opened this painting and drinking studio where there's a teacher at the front of the stage. There's a bunch of women in the room, typically women, drinking wine and painting a picture alongside with the teacher, like step by step. And it went over gangbusters, and we opened a second one in New Albany. So we had one in the Highlands in Louisville, and then New Albany, Indiana was the second one. And then we were like, you know what? We're selling a lot of wine. And mind you, we still had our pharmacy jobs at this time, like still working full time, opening this art studio bar thing.
So you were working how many hours?
I mean, a lot. I mean,
sleeping is the question, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would do my day job, and then obviously this thing is only at night. So I would get calls like, hey, what do we do? Or this or that. We had a really good manager in place though. And then obviously the weekends, so you're always just kind of on call. So, but it was fun. We were doing really well business wise. And so a couple years went by, still doing really well, but you know, we knew it was a fad. Like we figured this thing has like a 3 to 5 year runway. So like, just cause by eventually, people are going to have enough ugly paintings in their closet or garage.
I have one. Okay. I must confess, I gave it to my mother. She put it in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's very nice.
Yeah.
Well, she only puts it up when you come over, right? Probably. But so we noticed, like, hey, we're selling a lot of wine. And it wasn't good wine. It was like the, you know, the cheap stuff. And there's not really a good wine bar restaurant in Louisville. And so we're like, light bulb moment. Let's create one. Not having any sort of industry knowledge other than selling cheap wine at this art studio. So we went down this path of finding a space and developing this concept called Luvino, which we opened the first one in 2014 in the Highlands. We found the building. We actually purchased the building because it was like cheaper. The mortgage was cheaper than they wanted for rent. So it just made sense. And yeah, we opened up, it was July of 2014, I believe. And we figured it out. We hired a good executive chef, and we hired a good kind of sommelier in training slash general manager. And yeah, we opened up. We opened up then, and again, still had our had. I think I had gone down to part time by that point, and we just figured it out. We were the most qualified underpaid dishwashers in a restaurant, probably in the world. You know, two people that have, you know, a doctorate of pharmacy washing dishes every night. But we just did what we had to do to like learn. And people, you know, it's funny because our servers were like teaching us what to do. Because we often kid that the very first time we ever worked in a restaurant was the night we opened our own. So, but yeah, we just figured it out. And had trust in those people that we hired and trust in the people that those people had then hired to help them. And so we, that went over gangbusters as well. We ended up opening a second unit in Louisville in the Middletown area. And then we decided to start branching out of state. So we did two in Indiana and one in Cincinnati. So we ended up with five. Wow. So, and that was the Luvino model, which, for those of you who may be listening who don't know, it's like a small plates wine bar concept. Had 60 wines by the glass or so. And then during that, we had sold the art studio to focus on the wine bar concept.
Did you still keep your pharmaceutical jobs?
I eventually went all the way, I'd quit. And then Lauren ended up going part-time for a couple of years and then ended up also quitting. So it took us a while. I mean, it took us, call it 5 or 6 years for both of us to be completely out.
What did it take for you to just, because I think for someone wanting to start a business, people have the idea, but what was it? What did it take for you guys to say, let's do it? Or is it just a personality thing where you have that in you?
For me, the reason I got into pharmacy in the first place was it combined two things that I felt like I had an interest in or were really, I was just good at. And that was science and business. And the business I didn't know about yet, but I had an interest in it, like the entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, like I originally wanted to be a financial planner. And then like, maybe I don't want to do that. And then it was like, man, well, I own my own business. How can I do that? And also layer like science into that. And that was like, that was pharmacy. Because you can own your own. You have to have the science background, obviously. But it was just becoming very, very hard to, with a CVS and a Walgreens on every corner, to survive. And insurance rates continue to decline. So I knew that wasn't going to be it. So this art studio thing was like the perfect first business because we got to learn about a lot of different things from HR, accounting, real estate, leases, alcohol licenses, food service, a bunch of different things, but none of it was like super risky.
So it sounds like what really got you to take that leap was kind of predicting the future or the course of where you were at, and you're like, that's not gonna take me to where I want. So maybe I need to take a different path. Was that it?
Yeah. I mean, it was like I got into pharmacy on my own, and then I realized that probably wasn't gonna be, mm-hmm. but I still had this desire to do something in business. And I was pretty agnostic as far as what that was, hence why I'm in restaurants now.
Okay. But, so then we got to Luvino, you expand it. And
yes. So then, being from Georgia, I'd always just had this, in the back of my mind and just growing up, it's biscuits are very popular. So, and I remember even as an intern, when I was in college at Georgia, the pharmacist I worked with in the county I grew up in, which is just adjacent to the county that University of Georgia's in, his brother had a biscuit shop. It's called Biscuit Express. And me being the intern had to go get food and coffee for everybody every day. And so it was like this little subway model of, you know, you go down the line and say, okay, yeah, I want scrambled eggs or bacon or sausage or whatever. And so that, along with like just the little greasy gas stations that sold them, you know, the ladies with, you know, four teeth and, you know, hairnets serving biscuit sandwiches up. I don't know. That just stuck with me. And then, once I got into the restaurant business, I started noticing that, hey, this biscuit concept is becoming like a thing. Cause you had Maple Street Biscuit Company that started in Florida that was starting to expand in the Southeast. And you had like one called Pine State Biscuits up in Portland, Oregon. You had one called Biscuit Bitch and somewhere on the West Coast. And so you started to see like these little kind of 2 and 3 unit or bigger concepts starting to pop up. And so it's like, huh, okay, well, I've kind of had this biscuit idea in mind. I know the restaurant, you know, I'm learning the restaurant industry at this point, and now this thing's becoming, this biscuit concept thing is becoming a thing. And I remember talking to my chef probably like month 3 or 4 of Luvino opening, saying, hey, I think we're going to do a biscuit concept. And everyone kind of laughed, like, what do you mean biscuits? Like, what does that even mean? And so it always was in the back of my mind, but we were just focused on Luvino at the time and didn't have time for it. So around 2018, we were still expanding Luvino. We had opened another 2 locations after that, but we started to look at this biscuit concept. I had a list of like 80 names. Tavis, who was our executive chef at Luvino, was like working on menu ideas for it. And so it all kind of came together in 2018. We said, okay, we're gonna do this. So we started looking for spaces, focusing more on menu design, focusing on like just the color scheme and the name. And we worked with a professional company to do that here locally. And so we wanted to do it the right way from the very beginning and really like knock the brand out of the park and the menu and all that stuff. So anyway, opened the first unit in Nulu and here in Louisville in 2019. And yeah, ended up selling the Luvino concept in 2020, mid COVID, which is fine. So we had then again divested of the art studios in Luvino to focus on this, because it was the biscuit concept, Biscuit Belly, was going a lot better than we thought it would. So
why do you think the biscuit concept works so well?
I mean, we are kind of in the South here in Kentucky, South adjacent. So it was a unique concept for the area. Mm-hmm. We developed it not wanting to be just another bacon, egg and cheese, waffles, pancakes, you know, 5 different kinds of omelets type of place. We wanted to have a very unique menu that you couldn't get anywhere else. And I think the fast casual nature of it, and fast casual, if you haven't been, you stand in line, you order at a counter, you get a number, and then it's kind of full service after that. So we're running the food, bussing the tables. We have a bar program. We have, you know, a nice espresso program. So we're doing lattes and cappuccinos and all this stuff. So, I don't think not every breakfast place has a bar, or has espresso. You maybe just get drip coffee. The menu is very unique. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot quicker too, because you're not waiting and then waiting on your server and then waiting to order and then waiting to pay. It's like you do all that stuff up front, you sit down, when you're done, you leave. So it's a much quicker turn time, which allows us to get more butts in seats, as we say, and, you know, more revenue per square foot. And so anyway, Nulu went extremely well. Probably did double what we thought we were going to do per month. And then we opened St. Matthews location also in 2019. And then we were basically shutting everything down in March because of the pandemic. And then fast forward to today, we've got 14 locations that are either corporate owned through investors, through joint venture partnerships or franchised. And then a goal is to get to 20 by the end of next year.
Wow. What's the most unexpected place out of all those 14? And you're like, I never thought we'd, because you mentioned like the southernness that it works here in Louisville. But what is a place where you have a biscuit belly where it's like, I never thought this would work?
Well, luckily, we've been expanding in the southeast. So it's funny because Kentucky is probably our weakest market sales-wise, which is uncommon because typically, you know, concepts, they're strongest where they started, typically. But we've flourished even more so outside of the state of Kentucky. So that's, so I think that's a very positive thing. So there's not one city I would say, like, we went here and it did better or worse than expected. I think it's the fact that we've continued to do well outside of our home state. That's what people, when they're looking at franchising or investing in the brand, they want to see this, what we would call, like, does it travel? Does it travel to other states and continue to be successful? So, yeah, there's no surprises yet, I should say.
And that is usually the hardest thing, right? Because you're not there. You can't really go every day and check and make adjustments. What is the formula to be able to be successful at such a big scale?
Well, it's ultimately you got to get several things down pat. You need the concept and you need to prove out the concept. And I think we've done that. And then it goes down to site selection. So where those locations are based. And then ultimately, the two most important things, I think, are location and just your operations. So having that really good operator in the store, whether they're an operating partner or general manager, whatever the title is, the person that's the leader in the four walls of the restaurant or any business is the most important thing. And then for us, what we really learned along the way is, you know, you can't always look, we love promoting from within, but if that's all you do, you kind of get this incestuous kind of, you know, thing going on where those people only know your brand and may not have seen things outside of your brand. And then therefore don't know if you're really doing the right things or doing it the way that you maybe should or the smartest way. So, you know, and this happens to a lot of early stage brands where they'll promote their best barista to be a general manager and their best general manager to be a multi-unit operator overseeing 3 to 5 units, let's say. But those are very different skill sets. And you don't, you know, call it the whatever the Peter principle where you kind of promote someone until you fire them because they can't continue to do the job that you gave them, you know, most recently with that promotion. So for us, we realized this and said, hey, we want to do this the right way. So we need to be looking outside of the organization for talent that has grown and scaled a restaurant concept before. So we tried that with a couple of people that were from bigger brands like Cracker Barrel or Panera, like thinking, oh, well, they've been part of big brands. They should know the formula, right, of how to be successful. So we also learned not only can you not promote your barista to become maybe a general manager or general manager to oversee multi-unit and multi-states, but you also don't always get the You want a person that's a builder, not a checklist person. Mm-hmm. And so you don't always get that if you get someone in a brand that's 2,000, 3,000 units large, because they're just going around and checking boxes, making sure, you know, things are okay. Like, we needed the builders. Like,
How did you find them? That's the hard. I feel like finding the right people is really difficult.
It is. To me, you start to look at brands that have really done it the right way. And so luckily we have a couple of those, or did. I don't know if they're still here, some of them. But we have Texas Roadhouse, which is, if anyone who follows restaurant news knows that they've just continued to just break their own records, and they're kind of the leader of that category. And I mean, they just make every other restaurant concept look silly most of the time. It's just with how well that they do. And they're just very, very good operators. And so luckily we had or have a Roadhouse in our backyard, and we started to be introduced to some people that had many years of experience with Roadhouse, and started, and then they know others, you know, once you bring on one and they have a good experience with us and really like what we're doing. And then they know others in the brand who may still be there or may have left for whatever reason. And so, right now we've got two people on our team, you know, above store level that, probably between them, they've got 35 years of experience just within Texas Roadhouse. So, and they were there, you know, in some of the early stages. So they've seen that growth. They know what that growth looks like, and that really helps. But so for us, yes, we've gone through several people in that position mm-hmm. that didn't work out, and they interviewed great. But when, you know, when rubber meets the road, it's, you don't always, you know, everyone should interview well. And then once you really put them to the test, right. that's when you see if they can sink or swim. And we had several that sunk. But that's okay. You move on but now we're in a very good spot. So we're happy with where we are now.
So what is the hardest lesson you've had as an entrepreneur? And I guess I feel like when you have a lesson, you also grow the most. So I'm sure in building all of these businesses, you had a lot of roadblocks.
Yeah. I mean, our third night of Luvino's soft openings was media night. So it was when we were having, you know, everyone media related coming in, and our sewer pipe exploded. So yeah, it just disintegrated. And so yeah, that was a nightmare. That's just a construction thing, I guess. Yeah. But I am very hands-on and continue to be. But once you realize that once you get people, bring people on that you can trust, I think, you know, that delegate and elevate has been great for me. It's almost easier running, 14 to 20 units versus 1 to 2, because you can start to build that team around you. And it takes a lot of things off your plate that maybe you were doing at unit 1 that you don't have to do anymore at unit 15 or whatever. So, yeah, I think building that team and trusting them, and then just let them go do their thing, because they know way more than I do about training or operations. And yeah, I'm going to learn. I'm going to ask questions and maybe push mm-hmm. a little bit, but ultimately they're a lot more experienced than me. So I'm not trying to micromanage that process. And so just giving autonomy, I guess, and letting the people flourish and let them go do their thing and just be hands off. You know, constant general pressure and following up and accountability is also very important, but let them go do their thing.
That sounds like great leadership right there, but it's probably really hard to do it at the beginning.
Oh yeah.
Going from pharmaceutical to being an entrepreneur. Well, I feel like pharmaceutical, we were still somewhat of an entrepreneur, but something completely different. Did you have to have some kind of mindset change?
I mean, it was, I wouldn't say a mindset change. It was just a big learning curve. So, yeah. So I guess you have to say, gosh, I don't know anything about any of this stuff.
Humbleness.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. It makes you real humble real quick. It's I don't know what that person just said. You know, what did that lady from the health department, what is she talking about? What's a grease trap? What's a lease? You learn a lot of new terms and you learn how to read construction documents. And I mean, it's just, it's a big learning curve. Accounting, I mean, keeping books. Like, I can probably say this now that I'm like 7 years past when we when we sold the art studios, but man, I mean, I was keeping my own books. I didn't have any, I mean, I wouldn't do anything illegal or anything, but right. I probably did. I probably made some mistakes.
And I bet it was a lot of just in spending time on your own, just learning. Cause you, in order to be successful, I'm sure you eventually got all that knowledge and it's like, okay, well, they said this grease trap, how does it even work? Let me go figure it out.
Yeah, you do a lot of Google searching and you ask a lot of questions to you get some smart people around you that and I wouldn't say I ever had like I've had a mentor early on, but I was really trusting our team because they you guys have worked in restaurants all your life. Like I'm going to defer to you guys on X, Y, and Z. So it was a lot of trust that you have, but I mean, it's whether it's restaurants or art studios or whatever, like it's still ultimately running a business and dealing with people, dealing with the public, dealing with employees and everything that comes along with that. So, but yeah, it's you're drinking from a fire hydrant or fire hose from the beginning. And then it starts to settle down a little bit. And then you just start to continue to have this increased building block of knowledge. But I will say that when we first opened Luvino, I think probably the night that our sewage pipe blew up, I said, I will never do this again. This is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Did you reach that point when you actually tasted the reward? Because I know starting a business is just so much grind. You're working two jobs. You're trying to learn all these terms. You have no idea what you're doing with the books. And then eventually you're like, oh God, like we made it through this. Yeah. To this tunnel that we were just, because I think that's the hardest thing. Some people, when they start a business, they have the goal, there's a tunnel, but they don't make it through the end. When did you get to that? And what would be an advice you'd give somebody to that is in that situation where they're like, oh my gosh, I'm drowning. Please. Like I quit now or I'll never do this again. Like yeah. You said,
I mean, unfortunately, probably the reason that most businesses close other than maybe just a bad concept or location or, you know, crazy owners or whatever, is just the lack of capital. So you just don't realize how much things cost. And you just don't either borrow enough or raise enough or whatever, because we were in a very similar boat the first couple of months of the Uptown Art, the painting and drinking spot. It cost, you know, we had SBA loan and it cost, I don't know, whatever. I remember the city made us put these, bollards, the concrete posts to make sure you don't run into buildings. We had to put two of those in. It was going to be like $1,500 or something that I did not budget for. I was like, oh my God, like we got to, like, I think we obviously had the money cause we did it, but like we needed those in order to open. And I remember, yeah, we were very tight on cash in the first 2 months. I think we were kind of like break even. It's like, all right. And then it's just with social media and just people started, you know, posting pictures of their paintings and in front of our sign. And then it really just started to like, and so that, like, once we got past those first 2 months and you really started to see like growth week over week over week, that was probably the most exciting part. But you're always fearful of, okay, when's it going to end? Like, are people still going to start, or, you know, keep coming?
Is that still in the back of your mind now?
Yeah, I think it always is. We're looking year over year, every week. Like, how did we do this year versus last year? Mm-hmm. Whether it's in-store dining or catering or whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. I mean, a lot of restaurants are struggling, and things are a lot more expensive than they were a few years ago, as we all know and hear about in the news. And price, you know, so there's price sensitivity. There's just overall, how much money can I spend on breakfast or dinner? So yeah, it's a battle out there, but you know, we're still trying to innovate and, you know, find other ways to get revenue, such as catering, which has really blown up for us in a good way. So yeah, you just try to, you know, stay ahead of everything. Mm-hmm. And
you mentioned a very interesting word, because we're talking about biscuits here and innovation. And I'm very curious, how do you keep the soul of biscuits while also scaling it and make it and innovating? Because I feel like people are like your restaurant because it's innovative. But how did you achieve that?
Well, it's having a good foundation. So having a good menu, having a good team around you. And then to scale it, you have to put systems in place. And I remember a lady, Lisa, that we hired from at a Roadhouse. I mean, I just remember her looking at our recipes. And, you know, they were like original recipes written on, you know, yellow legal pad, you know, with a lot of scratch marks on it. And like, how do you scale this? You know, right. So let me rewrite these and put pictures in and diagrams and all this stuff. So yeah, it's a lot of systems based things, and it's a lot of follow up. Like we make people, we've got like this little checklist thing that every store is supposed to fill out every day. And, they take pictures of their biscuits, and so we can see what they look like. So our operations guy is looking at those every day,
making sure that they stick to the quality, the standard.
Yeah, that they look good. And, so it's not like an overnight thing. It's been a lot of little changes throughout the last few years. Again, just how detailed you are with recipes and what you're checking on operations wise. Because again, if you're not measuring it and holding people accountable for it, then they're probably not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So you got to kind of have your things that are non-negotiables. And for us now, where we used to not do this, is fresh biscuits every day. And so we used to make them like maybe at noon the day before and held them in the walk-in and then baked them off the next morning. But we realized that the ones made that day versus the previous day were like night and day difference in just the height and the fluffiness and all this. And so you bring in I mean, they're like half the size and they're just kind of more dense and dry. So if you had a biscuit
yesterday.
Okay.
I had a basic biscuit. Yeah. It was so good.
Well, good.
Yeah. So. And it was extremely fresh. I think I had it at like 1 p.m.
Oh, okay.
So it was.
Yeah, those were definitely that days. So, it's just a lot of, we continue to tweak things. Sometimes for operations purposes, sometimes maybe to save a little bit of money if it doesn't affect the quality. We're just always innovating. We do limited time offerings, LTOs, once a quarter. That's usually a couple of drinks, a couple of food options. So just to stay fresh, stay relevant. We have a loyalty program that we're constantly, and we're about to get a lot louder with that because we've got, you know, 160,000 people in our loyalty program. And we just need to be noisier, louder, stay top of mind. Just to, they're thinking breakfast, we're, you know, maybe mm-hmm. we just send them a text message or a push notification.
Where does Chad, the entrepreneur, see himself in 5 years? Do you see yourself in a completely different venture? Do you think you get bored? What?
Oh, I get bored extremely easily. My wife is like, it drives her crazy. Well, she, you know, we didn't really talk a whole lot about that, but you know, we're both in this, you know, 24/7, which is an interesting dynamic, but it works well for us.
Your wife works with you. How do you even keep the relationship together? Cause that can be a lot of stress on the relationship.
Yeah. And thanks for saying with me and not for me.
You probably work for her.
A little bit. Yeah. She's always been extremely supportive of everything that comes to my mind. And I wear that visionary hat and come mm-hmm. up with all the crazy ideas. And she's the the taskmaster that makes sure everything is, you know, is working the way it should. But yeah, and we've always been side by side in all these journeys. Funny enough, like she found the first, when she went to Alabama, she found the first business, and then I just kind of took it and ran with it. And that was pretty much my baby. She really didn't get involved too much in the business stuff until Biscuit Belly. It was kind of me that was doing 98% of it. But when she went or left Humana to support what we were doing a little bit, you know, more full time, she just kind of helped out wherever. And she's definitely way more of like the cheerleader, the taskmaster that just rolls the sleeves up and fills out all the forms that no one else wants to fill out when we're doing new locations. And she's taught herself alongside a controller that we used to have, bookkeeping. So now she keeps all of her books way better than I did, by the way, back in the day. So she's just like, however I can help, like I'll help. And so we kind of stay out of each other's way, which is good. Sometimes, you know, we talk about Biscuit Belly too much, and our kid, you know, our almost 10-year-old's like, can we please stop talking about Biscuit Belly, you know, at the dinner table. So he typically knows who's going to get fired next. You know, he hears all the gossip.
Yeah.
So, but, so yeah, there's not too many people I know that can work alongside their spouses as much as we do, but for us it works. So yeah, again, we stay in our lane, and I think, and you know, it's a partnership. It's not like me demanding a lot of things. I mean, she takes a whole lot off my plate, and just like the stuff I don't like to do that she likes to do. So I mean, it's just like, it's a perfect balance, I'd say.
That's nice that you have that. And I think it really has to do with personalities and how you're able to balance each other out. And like you said, the lanes, because once you start crossing those, that's when things can get a little bit confrontational. Or
yeah. And I'd say that's another thing. You talk about learnings that you kind of had when you first start out, you kind of have to do a little bit of everything. And there were just some things I hated doing. And I never really knew why until later. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm like the idea guy. I like to come up with things. That's why we came up with the wine bar. That's why we came up with the Biscuit Belly and the design, like the design aspect and the branding and how everything looks and feels and the kind of plates that we use, like all that stuff is, I can dig in that pretty deep. But yeah, like if you tell me to fill out a form or just any of that monotonous crap, like I hate that stuff. And so again, that's a reason that sometimes having more is easier than having less, because you have people that can do all the things. And so, you know, we're always helping each other. Like I got to fill out some forms. Okay. But, if someone's too busy, so it's a lot of teamwork, but I'd say that's definitely one thing I've learned about myself is like, oh yeah, I like to do the fun, like design and colors and branding and all that stuff versus the monotonous forms and whatnot. Yeah.
Now I think a lot of us here can relate, because that's the same thing we do in creative at Red Tag. It's just, you know, the fun, like being on set or coming up with designs, branding, and it's very fulfilling, but it is important to have people on your team that can, because when you can do the creative, your brain is one-sided. The other stuff is really hard to do. And I can tell you, because I try to do that stuff and it's really difficult. And then you probably don't do it well because you don't like it. You procrastinate. Yeah. So it is important to have, if you're starting a new business, the right people around you, the ones that can take up whatever you can't or don't want to do. And then for yourself to be able to focus on the things that you're good at. And it sounds like you found the number one, the right people and the right formula, the right recipe to put all this together. So it's really cool. So future. 5 years. What do you think? Oh, yeah.
5 years. So I can barely think about next week, but I think
you'll be innovating regardless.
Yeah. Like, I think I'll still be doing this. This is definitely a longer term play than the previous two things. And my business partner and I have said, look, as long as we're having fun and continuing to grow and it's working, like, well, there's not a private equity firm, you know, barking at us to finish or, you know, sell within 3 years or 5 years. So we can kind of take our time and do it. Do I think I'm going to pass this on to my 10-year-old when he's 25 or 30 or however old? Probably not. I think we might be past it. I do not have another idea that I'm just itching to do like I had this one. So, but again, it's like, well, I can't just like go sit by the pool or the beach. Like, that's incredibly boring. So I've got to be doing something, mm-hmm. But yeah, no idea. It'll probably be working for myself, most likely continuing to grow this. Again, I think we'll be at 20 units by the end of next year, 25-ish by the end of 27, just based on like pipeline and whatnot. So I don't know. Maybe we'll be at 40, 50 units, something like that. I don't know. We'll see. But I've also said eventually this thing might outgrow me. And I don't have this huge ego to say like, no, it's me, or, you know, no one else can do this. So eventually we may get to a point that I do something else. But right now it's not that hard. So.
And I think that your mindset of flexibility and just kind of going with where the path takes you really enables you to innovate and just take the opportunities that are presented to you. Because, yeah, if you had that mindset, no, this is my thing, then you wouldn't be able to do other things. Or just like with Luvino, mm-hmm. like, you wouldn't have taken this other path.
It's nice to have options and flexibility. And I think, again, because we've been able to, you know, funds that we needed to grow were either, you know, put in by us just through previous business sales or small friends and family investors. We've just never had to bring on a big investor who's going to dictate kind of our path. Like, I'd rather grow a little slower and it be a little bit more chill and not have someone breathing down your neck to meet numbers or this or that. And so, yeah, I just like the flexibility, I guess, and the freedom, I guess, that it provides.
If you could go back in time, knowing everything you've learned through this journey, what would you tell yourself, young Chad, fresh out of pharmacy school?
Yeah. We've had, this question got brought up during the kind of the pre-meeting. You know, I don't think there's anything I would change. And that's not to say we've done everything right by any means, but like, I feel that just this kind of innate thought process and how we've done things has just, it's worked out. And so I don't, again, like, there's no huge mistakes that were made. I mean, there's some locations that we built I would like to take back that just didn't perform as well. So there's nothing glaring that I feel like we would change. Now, as far as like advice, I think maybe be a little bit more patient. Maybe invest a little bit more in experienced above store level people. Maybe don't go like always the cheaper route because, and we've done that with Biscuit Valley. Like, we've gone out and got some, you know, very expensive people for our stage. And that's fine because they've, you know, paid for themselves in a way, but that investment has been worth it. And so you got to think of people and their experience as more of an investment than an expense, because, you know, you can avoid a lot of maybe more expensive mistakes down the road. So I would say like that and patience, maybe. Don't just, if you got money to do a location, don't just find the first one that comes. Like, be very, a lot more thoughtful and analytical about where you're putting these. Cause that's, again, that and operations are two of the most important things that you can, that typically go wrong if something fails.
Cool. Anything else that I didn't ask you about that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we hit.
Make you talk too much.
No, that's fine. Cool. Did I talk too much? I don't know.
No, no, honestly, it was a lot of learning, because it's interesting for people who are building their own business. They need to hear these things. It's super hard to have the balls to actually go out and do it, and to hear from you and understand, how did you do it? Okay, you still had your part-time job. You had that, I guess, safety net. Then your wife supported you. The ability to be able to trust people. And I mean, I'm sure there were a ton of hurdles, but like, it's inspiring to be able to hear that and to know, okay, it wasn't just a breeze, and it does take all of these things. But if I hear it from someone who's been able to do it, then that may allow someone else to actually take the leap.
Yeah. I'd say one thing I'm glad we did, and I would do this again, is we were starting a new business and both had full normal, like W-2, 9-to-5 jobs, so to speak, that I would definitely continue to, just because you just never know if something is going to work out. So like, keep your day job as long as you can, if you can, because, and we were lucky that we had these great degrees that we could go out and get a job the next day. So we had that benefit. But again, I always say that I'd rather work 60 to 80 hours for myself than 40 hours for somebody else. It's just, even though you're working more, you have a lot more freedom, I feel like, of just, you don't have to clock in. You don't have to be somewhere at a certain time. I mean, I'm an early riser anyway, but I may start doing emails at 6 one day and maybe it's 8:30 the next. So, and we can kind of work from wherever. Like, we aren't really in the stores that much, because we have people that do that. So we just have the freedom to go and, you know, travel and work from other places. But again, it wasn't always like that. We were very much, again, we were washing dishes for the first 3 weeks of opening Luvino every night. And I still was there working. Like, I worked I was basically the manager during the Sunday brunch shift for several years, just to kind of, again, keep finger on the pulse of the place and make sure people were satisfied and things were running well. And, I think people that open a restaurant or retail store and they open it and they think it's going to be some passive investment, those typically fail pretty quick.
Yeah. You have to have the mentality to be able to roll up your sleeves and do whatever.
Yeah. And you gain a lot of respect. Like, not many owners are going to come in and start doing dishes. So that, like, if you want to know the best way to gain respect, and at least in a restaurant, is, yeah, literally getting dirty, rolling the sleeves up and knocking out some dishes. And that goes a long way. So you gain a lot of respect for that.
It's a great example to your employees, just to let them know, I'm willing to do anything for this to work. So you all want to get on the boat with me, let's row together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love that. Thanks for tuning in to Coordinates Unknown. I'm Ana Rodas. And if this story resonated with you, share it with somebody pursuing their own vision. And we will see you next time at the edge of the map.